This is Ask with your host, Michelle Martin on 938 Live.
And my guest is Ricky Yeo, president and founder of Action for Singapore Dogs. Ricky, I've read that to a dog, we humans are merely an animal. Some of us are big, we're adults, some of us are small, infants, children. Is that how dogs see humans?
Well, from a dog's point of view, yes, you are seen as either a pack member or a pack leader. Now, if you're a pack member, you're just on his equal, as his equal, and he will treat you like one, yeah? And, basically, a lot of problems stem from a dog not seeing leadership in a pack.
Huh? How do I establish leadership?
Well, you could have a lot of ways to do that, but it's not just a single thing. It has to be...
Cesar Millan talks about exuding calm energy.
Yes.
And maybe a stance that's that exudes confidence.
Yes, it has to be certain core attributes that you have to exude. I break it down into the three C's.
Okay.
Being clear, being calm, and being consistent.
Calm. So if you're emotional and angry, they don't see that as leadership?
No. In fact, what dogs do, they have a emotional antenna that's about 40 times more sensitive than ours. So if you're angry, they lock into that energy and they also get very riled up. Yeah. And so usually you can see how a dog behaves. It's usually reflective of the nature of the owner as well. That's how I usually assess how the environment is. Yeah. How?
Oh.
Yeah.
You mean if a dog is stressed, it could be because the owner is stressed?
Usually. Usually, that's the way. Or the owner gets agitated very
quickly,
very easily.
I've read somewhere that, you know, dogs tend to want to be aggressive to other people if they assume that their owner needs protection. So if they don't see you as a leader, then they feel the need to sort of protect you. When you're, and to some extent, they feel like they're walking you.
Yeah.
Is that
true? Here's the secret into a dog's mind. Yeah.
Okay, please.
In a pack, right? And it doesn't have to be in the wild, but in a domesticated environment, you guys, the family, the human family, are his pack members or his pack, part of his pack. Now, if he doesn't see leadership that he needs to see, and we're talking about leadership in terms of a dog's perspective, not a human perspective, he will take over the leadership. Yeah. So when he takes over that leadership, that's where things happen. That's where you see a lot of aggression, a lot of dominance, because he feels the need to have to protect the pack. That's part of his responsibility. That's where he feels very nervous, very emotionally intense. You know, he's always on guard duty. You see dogs that just pace up and down all the time.
Yeah.
Barking at every single little noise, you know, having to rush into the door to inspect every little thing.
So to correct that, you would have to exert more authority?
You have to take that responsibility back away from him, away from the dog,
oh.
Yeah, and show that you are a capable leader.
I think another problem that people do is they humanize their dogs. And so you see a lot of people trying to rationalize with their dogs and being very verbal with their dogs. And that doesn't work, does it?
No, exactly. You know, I always get people who come up to me and say, oh, my dog's feeling jealous. My dog's feeling angry. He's irritated and all that. That's how we try to rationalize their actions through human emotions. But dogs don't feel that, you know. Dogs don't feel jealous. Dogs may want to possess you. They may think of you as an object of desire and vie with another dog for you, but it's not a jealousy thing. It's from their perspective, it's very practical. It's what they think will benefit them.
And, you know, highly verbal, long, logical arguments with your dog are not going to work. That's why a lot of commands are short and quick.
Exactly, yeah. You need to... Your tone of voice is important. It doesn't matter what you say. Your dogs only hear blah, 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 right? But the tone of voice is important, yeah? And the sound that comes out is important. Yeah? So it's always good to be like one of my three C's, which is being clear, yeah? So it's always sharp and short. Precise.
Important to be within the dog's point of view, you know, sight, within their sight when you're issuing command, or
sight-wise,
sound enough?
Well, you notice that the dog has many senses, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sight is only one of them. Smell, even emotional energy, they all
sense
that.
So my dog does not have to be in a position to be able to see me to be able to understand my command then?
Not necessarily. But it's always good if your dog has eyes as a focus, line of sight kind of thing, but not necessarily.
Well, my dogs are rebellious anyway, whether they can see me or not. Okay, let's talk about some common problems with dogs as pets. Little dogs can be aggressive. I know I've been chased by a very nippy chihuahua. I had to run for my life. How do you help animals and owners when little dogs or big dogs are aggressive towards other people?
Right. When dogs are aggressive towards something, it could be people, it could be dog-to-dog aggression, there's always an underlying reason. Yeah, and usually that reason is because of that leadership role that the dog has undertaken. Yeah, I do a lot of this kind of behavior modification programs for my clients, where dogs is extremely aggressive, or will lunge at people on walks and dogs, and all that. And essentially, it's always about not having that leadership. You know, that is what we call a symptomatic behavior. You see the symptoms, yeah? Mm. We don't treat the symptoms, because the traditional school of thought is if the dog is aggressive, whack the hell
punish,
out of the guy. Yeah,
right?
Punish or,
is that what with aggressive dogs?
Until he submits, But you'll find that when a dog is in that state, like I said, the instinct mode, it will take quite a lot to bring him down, because the adrenaline is coursing through the dog and he doesn't feel pain anymore, So to handle the issue at that point in time is actually a little bit too late. So we got to go all the way back, down to his environment, down to his daily lives, and put that behavior modification program in place to take that leadership role away.
So aggressive dogs can be reformed?
Oh, yes, yes.
Okay, there is hope then.
There is always hope.
All right. 669-11938. If you'd like to get your questions through on common behavioral problems that you might be facing with your dog at home, we'd be happy to hear from you. My guest today is Ricky Yeo. He is the founder of Action for Singapore Dogs. Ask continues in a while.
This is Ask with your host, Michelle Martin, on 938 Live.
And today we're talking about common behavioral issues of dogs as pets. And Ricky Yeo, president and founder of Action for Singapore Dogs, joins us. We've got so much to go through, Ricky. We'll start with slightly sad news. It really horrified dog lovers like me to read how in August this year, there was a report of a 40-kilogram Rottweiler which snapped at a 4.3-kilogram Silky Terrier at an annual dog walk, and the terrier was killed almost instantly. Now, according to press reports, the 4-year-old Rottweiler had been unmuzzled to drink some water. It was a hot day, and the smaller dog, the Silky Terrier, who passed away, was off leash because they were about to take part in a ball throwing event, so to speak, the terrier and owner. There are conflicting versions and many questions about what actually happened, among them whether the smaller dog provoked the attack by attacking first, and questions of why the Rottweiler was unmuzzled in a crowded place. But what the story shows up is the importance, and we were talking earlier, of owners being responsible enough to preempt a possible attack. And with effect from 15th November 2010, any newly licensed dog of a breed listed in a schedule that you can read at the AVA's website, the second schedule, or any dog assessed by the AVA to be potentially dangerous is required to undergo basic obedience training by an AVA-accredited dog trainer. So let's talk about the accreditation scheme. Is this new, Ricky?
Do you think it's
important?
Oh, yes. I think AV has come a long way in in taking steps to regulate the industry, which has largely been unregulated for as long as we remember. Mm. Now, this brings another level of professionalism to the industry, especially when we talk about potentially dangerous dogs. Yeah, you want to ensure that your dog is taught by a trainer that at least knows his stuff, and the accreditation is one of the process in which we try to assess whether the trainer has the ability, the experience, the expertise to actually impart his knowledge in being able to solve issues like aggression. Excuse me, aggression and other kinds of dominance kind of issues. Mm. Yeah, so I serve on this panel as well, and basically our philosophy is that we want to make sure that trainers that apply to be accredited firstly have the relevant experience. Yeah, we're not just talking about being able to just teach basic obedience. Yeah. When we talk about a potentially dangerous dog.
Because category B animals include Bull Mastiffs, Bull Terrier, Doberman Pinschers, Rottweilers, big dogs, German Shepherds, dogs. The ability to cause real harm very quickly.
Exactly, and this is exactly what happened at the National Dog Walk, because all it takes is a split second and disaster strikes, you know. So we want to make sure that these trainers have the ability to be able to assess, profile such dogs, and also be able to teach the owners how to control their dogs. Mm. Yeah, so the proper knowledge and experience must be imparted to these owners, you know, and they will have to be responsible, you know, when these owners pass the course and the trainer signs off on that. Because further down the road, if anything happens and the dog is involved in such incidents, the trainer that trained that dog will have to be responsible. You know, so we are having a feedback mechanism that way to ensure that you know, the only proper trainers that are accredited will be able to.
How is this assessed?
I'm sorry?
How is this assessed?
The assessment based on a couple of factors. Firstly, we also have references, from the trainers themselves. They would have to submit references. It's all in the application. They have to submit a background on their training expertise, on their experience, and also on their references. Yeah, so references will actually be called upon to check on whether what they stated in the application is true.
Okay, so you want to look for an AVA accredited dog trainer, definitely, if you're serious about dog training.
Exactly.
Okay, let's get to the nuts and bolts of common problems. Our listeners have written in and said, picky eaters ranks up there. How can I deal with my dog if he just will not eat what I serve? Eats what he wants.
Yes, this is the most common problem also I encounter with many dog owners. The premise again is, you know, sometimes the way we humanize our dogs again, yeah?
Yes.
Most common reaction when a dog doesn't eat is, okay, let's try changing the flavor of the food. Yes?
Absolutely right. Yeah.
From there, it sometimes spiral downwards to coaxing a dog to eat through hand feeding.
Yes.
Yeah. I have seen some of my clients that resorted to even cooking fresh food for them. You know,
putting my hand up.
Yeah.
Here.
From you know, from using caught fish to, you know, you know, wagyu beef and all that.
Oh,
so
yes.
Yeah, people, you know,
baking muffins.
Yeah, and you know, dog owners will go through the extreme for their dogs. But you know, when you do such things, essentially, then you are reinforcing your dog's
bad behavior.
Yes. Exactly. Now, you have to understand from the dog's point of view, if you are in the wild and, well, if you have a dead rat to eat, would you eat it? You still would, right? So that's because it's survival, yeah? But when our dogs are in our domesticated environment, then they tend to take things for granted. Because magically, every morning, they get this bowl of food, delicious as it is. And sometimes they take things for granted, yeah? They would leave food around. Sometimes they take a few kibbles, a little bit, and they go off and do their own stuff, and their owners be running after them, yeah? So essentially, when you're doing this, you are reinforcing the bad behavior. So what you can try to do as a very start is to leave food out, not leave food out. As in, if you put the bowl down and your dog refuses to eat,
pick it up.
Pick it up, put it away.
After mealtime.
Yeah. You know, don't leave it out there.
Mm-hmm.
And don't make a fuss out of it as well. Yeah.
Okay.
After a while, your dog's stomach's going to tell the brain, don't be stupid, we got to eat.
Ah,
yeah?
I like
that. So
that's
a very basic premise, yeah. Of course, we have various programs to even go delve deeper in that if the dog resists and all, because we don't want our dogs to starve to death either.
Oh, no, of course not. All right, Michelle joins us now with a question. Hi, Michelle.
Hi.
What's the question for Ricky?
My question is, I have a dog that's on the other end of the spectrum. He eats everything, including stones, snails, flowers.
Okay, yeah, you got to be very careful about that. If your dog is a gobbler, does he wolf down his food and stuff? Very quickly?
Yes, he eats very quickly.
Okay, and does he defecate just as quickly, say within half an hour?
Actually, yes.
Okay. Yeah, it could be biological and psychological. Essentially, sometimes when a dog eats that fast and then defecates, there could be a digestion issue. And that's the biological part of it. You could try to slow down the eating by having a food bowl that's segregated, i.e. it's the bowl is split up into different sections, and the portions of the food is then allocated in these different sections. So what the dog has to do is slow down the eating, because he has to eat one portion, move on to another portion, etc., etc. So a very simple way to do that is to convert your big food bowl into this kind of segregated food bowl by using these little sauces, you know, we use
dim sum sauces.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And we just put it in there and we spread the food around there. So he has to take his time to do that. Yeah. So that could also be biological, but it also could be psychological, where, you know, he's just has a penchant for eating up everything, like you said, on the walks and all. Now, this part is a little bit more tricky, but you do have to take measures to ensure that this doesn't happen. And you have to, during the walks, keep him very close to you. Yeah, don't maintain a pace slow enough that he starts to wander around, sniff the ground and all that. Maintain an optimal pace. Every dog has one, to ensure that the dog always keeps pace with you. So that is another way.
What could be the psychological root of a gobbler eating stones?
Well, it's just sometimes, you know, when they smell it and they like what they smell, they'll eat it. Yeah. And it's just a psychological thing. So the point of it is to break his focus or his, you know, his fixation with this kind of stuff. Mm. Yeah. So that's what you have to do during the walk. And this, again, something that we teach in our programs, that when you go on a walk, or what we call the hunt, the dog focus on you as the pack leader, and he doesn't do his own thing.
So it's not that Michelle's dog is just extremely hungry.
Oh, no.
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 Thanks, Michelle, for calling.
Yes, thank you so much.
You're most welcome. 6691-1938 if you have a question on any problem that you're facing with your dog at home. Toilet training. Oh, before we go to toilet training, because that's a big issue. We have to talk about laying paper down. We're going to talk about the constant barker when we return.
This is Ask with your host, Michelle Martin, on 938 Live.
All right, here we are talking about our topic of the day, which is whether or not there are no problem dogs, just problem owners. If you have a dog-related question, which is what this show is about this evening, then do give us a ring at 669-11938. Again, if you have a dog-related question, because that's what the show is about. Okay, so we've got Kelvin on the line with us. Hi, Kelvin.
Hi, okay. Okay, I used to have a little puppy.
Okay.
Who is a constant barker. So, I mean, I do understand that little puppies, they're a little bit afraid of dark. So, I tried several methods, like on the lights for them, and maybe play some music, but it doesn't really help. And recently, I'm thinking of getting another dog. That's why I'm just afraid that this problem will arise again.
How old is your puppy?
What's that?
How old is your puppy?
It was then about a month old or a month old.
And yeah. how long did this problem persist?
It persists almost 2 to 3 weeks.
2 to 3 weeks, huh?
Yeah. I then received complaints from my neighbor.
Yes. Now, usually for a puppy stage, when a puppy first gets into an environment, it's very confusing and very scary. Yeah? It's been separated from its natural pack. It's been assimilated into an environment it does not understand. It does not see its mother, its playmates anymore. It sees humans. So it's rather scary, especially at night when all is silent. And, and it's very scary to a puppy. So generally, when they do that, they will start whining. Now, this is what we call the settling in period during the first 2 weeks or so. What you need to do, that period probably has passed. But if you're getting a puppy in future, what you have to do is, at least for the first few nights, you may have to settle him well, as in when you turn off the lights, you may just have to sit down beside him, not talking per se, not cuddling him, but just being around. Yeah, being a new pack leader to your puppy, to show that you're around, being calm and just having a presence there. Yeah, that usually helps. Now, the whining and the barking is usually going to be part and parcel during the first few days. So it's always good to also let your neighbors know, so that at least when they are aware, they may be more understanding.
Just out of respect for them as well. All right. Thanks very much for your question, Kelvin. All right, 669-11938. We've got a couple of minutes left to get your questions through. Let's talk about the constant barker, not the puppy, just the constant barker.
Now, a dog can bark for many reasons. A dog can bark for attention. Mm. A dog can bark out of separation anxiety. A dog can bark at perceived dangers.
My dog barks at little children. I think he's a bully.
Yes, so that falls under the category of a perceived danger. Mm. To a dog, as the name implies, perceived dangers can be anything.
Okay.
Yeah? I've seen dogs barking at stones, at leaves that rustle in the wind and all that. So that is essentially their perception.
So he's feeling under threat. When a dog barks, it feels under threat.
Yes. Now, again, perceived threats, again, we have to look at the underlying cause. Again, barking at a perceived threat is a symptomatic behavior. Now, when we talk about the underlying cause, it's always about what kind of pack leadership role he has. So if he has a very strong pack leadership role, he's going to feel that very need, that very strong need to protect the pack. And anything could be a threat. Yeah. Mm. So we have the constant barker then, which will bark at any sound, anything that moves, even smells. Yeah. So you have a very stressful dog there. And essentially what you need to do then is take that role away, you know, from him. Just punishing him based on being a barkish dog is not going to solve the problem.
What's useful ways of punishment?
Now, punishment, again, there are many schools of thought.
Yes.
Yeah, the those very violent, the those that just say leave the dog be, you know, leave it up to, you know.
Or cordon it off in a certain part of the house.
Yes, you could do that. This is essentially something which we do as well. It's called pack separation.
Mm.
Yeah, and we separate him from the pack. And that is one of the better ways of doing it. Yeah, instead of resorting to violence or electric collars or any kind of painful methods.
We've got about 2 minutes left on the clock. I want to squeeze in another question from our caller, Jimmy, who called in to say his dog eats his own poo. Now, that sounds like a health issue.
Again, that's a biological or a psychological issue.
Mm-hmm.
Biological, again, it's to do with the GI or the gastrointestinal
tract. So he could have a health problem?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Usually, we would treat this as a health problem first. Again...
So, Jimmy, you may want to get your pet to a vet.
Not necessarily, nope. But what you can do is just observe. Again, if he eats really fast, or even if he doesn't eat fast, but he defecates very fast.
He eats his own poo.
Yes, what happens is when they eat and they defecate very fast,
mm-hmm.
It usually means that there's no absorption at all. So what happens is the dog will smell the poo and say, "Hey, that smells like my food." So
oh,
it eats
I
it
see,
up,
see.
You know. So mm-hmm. Again, we could treat this issue very simply just by adding either probiotics or digestive enzymes. Yeah, as a very simple kind of home treatment plan rather than going to the vet, which will essentially give you the same thing as well. Okay. Now, if that biological habit is not curtailed, then what happens? It becomes a psychological problem where it becomes a habit.
Okay.
So even though he doesn't have that problem, he still does it.
Ricky, thank you so much for joining us. We're flat out of time, but thank you for sharing the message of responsible pet ownership and giving us some great advice.
Thank you. It's been great being
wonderful.
Here.
Thanks for joining us here on Ask the Repeat Air, Sunday, 7 to 8 a.m. and 3 to 4 p.m.
And now,